This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
She was a vampire who could never see the light of day.
He was a zombie shuffling his way through the afterlife.
Love would bring them together,
but human flesh would tear them apart.
They were doomed to be on Sci-Fi and Scream.
Tuesday nights from 10 on Joy 94.9.
Hello, darling. It's me, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, the Vamp of Camp, bringing you the best of the worst. Or is it the worst of the best?
And this is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show, Mitch.
Hey, guys.
Hey. We're in the studio here and we're going to be talking very quickly about something called Monster Fest, films that bite, with one of the organisers, Neil Foley. But before we do that, just want to welcome Tara Judah, back to the, I was going to say the stage, but back to the studio. Welcome.
Back to the studio. That could be a time travel movie. Maybe we could elaborate on that later. Thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
That's cool. Because we will be looking at science fiction fact versus science fiction, I guess. We also have some prizes to give away. And you probably heard Elvira saying welcome to, or Mistress of Horror herself, welcoming you all to the show tonight here on Joy 94.9. Well, on the line, we've got Neil Foley. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Thanks, Sonia.
So, we're going to have a bit of a chat. You're going to tell us all about something called Monster Pictures and, of course, the Monster Fest Film Festival that's coming up here in Melbourne, Australia.
Yeah, right. Sure. Well, Monster Pictures is a film distribution company that we started a couple of years ago that mainly does fairly kind of gnarly kind of genre films. Mm-hmm. We a lot of people probably know us from films such as The Human Centipede 1 and 2, which kind of we kicked the label off with and caused, you know, quite a bit of kind of, a few raised eyebrows. Last year we did a film festival which you spoke about on your show called the Fantastic Asia Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we decided to keep that concept going of doing a festival with our titles, but this year we've broadened it out a little bit and we're doing it as Monster Fest, and it's 25 films over 10 nights, a partnership with Cinema Nova, and it should be pretty amazing.
Yes. Now, you probably heard Elvira, did you? She's one highlights, one of the special guests coming over. Who else have we, who else have you got coming?
Well, Elvira, as you know, and Larry Cohen, who is, a very famous writer of and director and producer of numerous B classics, films such as The Stuff. Which we're screening at Monster Fest. Lauren Landon, who stars in Maniac Cop, she's going to be here, and she stars in another film called Hundra. A lot of people might know that film from the early 80s. It was a really cool kind of sword and sandal kind of an epic, sort of like a female Conan kind of a thing. Well, she'll be here.
Cool.
We've got Jan and Sylvia Soska, the directors of a film that we did last year called Dead Hooker in the Trunk, and they've just completed a film called American Mary, which we're using as the closing night film, which is a pretty amazing film.
Mm.
And a bunch of others, really. We've got like a load of directors and, sort of actors. We've got, a bunch of, premier Australian films where there'll be, obviously the cast and directors and producers and stuff presenting the film.
Yeah.
And some more international guests as well. So all in all, it's a, it's a pretty sort of loaded 10 days.
Well, it's a big event, sure.
Yeah.
Now, what are some of the films? You've mentioned Maniac Cop and The Stuff, but there are some Aussie films as well that get their first time, is that right? Premiering?
Exactly. We've got, there's a film from Melbourne called 10 Metres, made by a guy called Rory Note that won the DigiSpa contest last year. There's another one called The Caretaker, and there's a really cool sci-fi comedy called 25th Reich by a Melbourne filmmaker, Stephen Amos, which is pretty fantastic. We've got another film called Muir House, which is a kind of a found footage things set in a haunted house in New South Wales, actually filmed in a genuine, you know, Australia's most haunted house, apparently. And then there's, you know, a bunch of Australian premieres, a lot of horror stuff. You know, we're opening with The ABCs of Death, which is only just screened only in the last couple of weeks. It premiered at Toronto International Film Festival at the Midnight Madness section there about a week ago, which is pretty incredible. That's going to be the opening film. And we've got films like, oh, God, we're closing with American Mary. We've got, let me have a look here, we've got Inbred from the UK, Red Ink, another Australian film starring Nick Hope that people know from Bad Boy Bubby. We've got a bunch of Asian films, that Japanese films particularly, that we, last year, as I said, we did Fantastic Asian Film Festival. This year, we're keeping that as a sidebar within the kind of the broader festival. And so we've got three great new films, one called Zombie Video, a kind of a zombie teen kind of a thing, another one called Hinge, another one from the director that we had last year, Noboru Iguchi, who people might know from films like Zombie Ass and Zorbago. We've got his new film, Dead Sushi. We've got Clown, God Bless America.
Fantastic. A real bunch of great sounding, to me, films. Now, as far as where can people go to find out more? And you've got some events as well that they need to look up. So how can they find out?
Well, they can go to the Monster Fest website, which is monsterfest.com.au, or they can go to the Cinema Nova website, which is very easy to find. And we have because there's a bunch of events within the festival, so for instance, there's masterclasses, there's the Night of the Women, which is a night where Elvira and Laureen Landon will host screenings of their films, plus there's a panel, and on that panel there's going to be the Soska sisters, as well as the Gorlesque girls. It's going to be a pretty amazing night. So all of these events, there's a premium ticket available as well, and that's only just gone on sale. So if they go onto the Nova website or the Monster Fest website, all the details about that,
they'll find out about that. Great. We're pretty excited, definitely, Neil, because we're hoping to talk to some of those awesome guests that you're having to come over. So certainly on Sci-Fi and Scream, we will be delving in a lot more. So good, I just want to say, thanks for chatting to us.
No worries, Sonia.
This evening.
Always a pleasure. Yeah, no worries. Yeah, anytime.
All right. Thank you very much, Neil. That's Neil Foley from Monster Pictures.
It's Sci-Fi and Scream, Jim, but not as we know it. Enjoy 94.9.
One station in all the world, a chosen station.
To boldly go where no show has gone before. Sci-Fi and Scream.
On Joy 94.9.
Bridge to Shuttlecraft Cochrane. You're cleared for launch.
Aye, Captain. See you at warp 10.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, and that was Kate Bush, Cloudbusters, and that is quite a relevant kind of song for tonight. If you just tuned in, we are talking about sci-fi and real life and the mix of it all, and just then we had an interview with Neil Foley. Thank you very much, Neil. Later on in the evening, we do have a Looper review, because Sonia and I did go and see Looper earlier in the evening, and we also have the lovely Tara Judah, in the studio tonight. How's
Hello.
It going, Saria?
Tara? I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And so, and we also have one more interview later in the evening with Abigail, and she'll be talking about robots that Sonia saw earlier in the week.
Ishiguro as robots. Very interesting. Telenoids, but we'll tell you about that later on.
Yeah, and I think... And we have a little bit of music from Queen coming up, and we just had a little bit of Kate Bush and Electric Dreams earlier. And
was the relevance about the Kate Bush?
Ah, yes, because of sci-fi regarding sci-fi and real life.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. Jenny fell asleep. And this song was about a scientist who was looking at theories of controlling the weather.
Oh, right.
And so he started...
Was it Tesla?
I can't remember his name.
It sounds like Tesla.
I had a link.
You had a link there.
And so he was experimenting with, like, affecting the weather, creating storms, and with, I think it was, like, electro pulses.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just theories. And the government, or a government organization, came and arrested him and destroyed all his research. And he died.
Oh.
And he died for his research. But that, I think, was very relevant because it's a very kind of sci-fi idea, being able to control the weather with electromagnetic. And it's very, like, he was very scientist, and I think it's reality meeting science fiction, like, because it sounds very fictional as well.
Yeah, well, there's some great inventors from the past, and I know Tesla and Thomas Edison were at some point foes, but that's another story altogether.
Well, maybe Thomas Edison had something to do with this guy getting killed.
I'm sure he didn't. No, I'm sure that's not the case at all. Remember, could be fiction. We don't know. Maybe.
Could be fiction.
Do have Tara here, Tara Judah from The Aster, amongst other things. Welcome again to the show.
Thank you.
And you saw Looper as well, so we're going to chat about what you think of it a bit later
on. Yes, looking forward to having a chat about that.
Mm. And also, just quickly, we do have a prize. If you did just tune in, we do have a really amazing prize to give away. Message in. You can tell us kind of your favourite sci-fi reality show or sci-fi meeting reality experience or ideas, or kind of argue with what
do
we're
the time
thinking.
Warp. Now, Tara, you're involved with the Aster Cinema and also something called Plato's Cave. What can you tell us about both of them?
Yes, well, the Aster Theatre has had an interesting and tumultuous year. We've recently been through quite a roller coaster. As I'm sure most people would be vaguely aware, the building was owned by St. Michael's Grammar School, and they have been the landlord. And recently, after a sort of public campaign where Friends of the Aster pleaded with the school to say, look, there's a lot of support for the cinema and people don't want it to stop being what it is, and and stop being the film icon that it is in Melbourne. It's a very historic site. It's an important cultural icon for filmgoers in Melbourne. And essentially, we didn't want it to become a performing arts centre, which is what we think St. Michael's plans were. So they have sold the building to an individual, Ralph Taranto, who also owns other buildings that house cinemas around Melbourne. So he's a cinema lover and a cinema enthusiast, and happy to keep the Aster as it is. So that's where we're at presently. We're still hoping to negotiate our long-term lease with our new landlord, but hopefully it'll mean many, many years to come of the Aster staying where it is as it is.
And Marzipan
as a cinema.
A home.
And with Marzipan having her home. We can't have a homeless cat.
A homeless cat. No, you can't. No. Definitely not. And of course, what's great about the Aster Theatre is, you know, the genre films. You get to see them again if you missed them the first time around.
Absolutely.
Cabin and in the Woods, you have played that.
We did, and we've got it on again with Drag Me to Hell as a double feature.
Oh, goodness.
I think that's going to be an interesting one.
And you've got Plato's Cave now. That's film reviews and
Film review podcast that I do with Thomas Caldwell and Josh Nelson. And weekly we chat about films that we've seen and get stuck into a topic, and sometimes talk a little bit too long and get a little bit too passionate, but it's a lot of fun.
Bit of dissection, but nobody gets hurt.
No, not usually.
Which is good. All right.
Just thinking about Captain Kirk, as we spoke earlier, how has Star Trek affected real life as sci-fi? Like, just thinking about that.
Interestingly enough, in fact, you should say that, Mitch. Of course, you probably saw me doing some research earlier.
I didn't, but I was thinking more about the automatic doors.
Oh, don't know about the automatic doors, but warp drive looks like it may become a possibility in the future. It was announced only last week, September the 17th, by NASA, that they intend to work on that concept of warp drive or warp speed. So it could be a reality, Scotty.
Mitch. That's why I put that sound in before.
Oh, that's very good.
Really good.
Now, Dr. Harold Sunny White, the Doctor of Advanced Propulsion at NASA, says that perhaps a Star Trek experience within our lifetime could be possible. Remote, but possible.
It depends on how old you are right now.
Exactly, if you haven't been born yet, or you're in a fetal stage or something. So they've already started work to create one, so that's pretty awesome. And with current propulsion technologies, they say that interstellar flight is impossible at the moment, even with experimental technology like ion thrusters or a spacecraft's aft popping, pooping, freaking nuclear explosions. I mean, that could be dangerous. So it seems to be about money and cost and how much resources and fuel, a lot of nuclear energy would be required. And the other thing is, what would take normally 20 years to get to, say, a certain another galaxy would take only 2 years with warp speed. That seems a long time still, but
no,
it's an
that's
advancement.
Actually pretty good. That's a bit of a big step.
It's a lot faster.
It's a lot faster. So yeah, it's just looking positive, I think.
Yeah, but if we go back to those automatic doors, I'm just thinking, we're talking about the kind of reality of and the accuracy of science in science fiction films. Really, what you'd want with that to be accurate is that the doors don't always open. Because in real life, they don't work all the time.
They don't.
I had difficulty just recently getting into this building. So sometimes the automatic door doesn't recognise you when you stand in front of it. And I think, the lack of faults sometimes perhaps in science fiction films.
People standing in front of glass doors waiting for it to open, and they're manual, you've got to push, and there's all these people standing there waiting for something to happen.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
And this is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. We've had a couple of people going into the running for Tech War, William Shatner's novel turned into a television series. We've got, firstly, it's Mia who'd like to enter the draw. Thanks, Mia. And we've got Johnny saying his ex goes warp speed whenever they see me in the street. Well, that's interesting. Jamie says his favourite sci-fi film is Barbarella, with the lovely Jane Fonda, of course, set in the year 4400. Love that film. I believe they're going to make it into a television series, but that could be a bit interesting.
I would love that, I think. I think that'd be really good.
I don't know how they're going to stretch it, but Jane Fonda won't be in the main role. I think Rose McGowan's been talked about, but who knows. Right, looking at science fiction and reality. Tara, I'm going to throw you in there.
Yeah, I'm thinking with science fiction, one of the things that there's a lot of questions that you have to ask about the necessary quality of plausibility in the films. And I think one part of it is that we need to remember it is science fiction. So it has a fictional element. And
true.
To go along with that has to be some sense of imagination. You don't want it to be too close to reality or else it's just strictly science. But at the same time, there is increasingly, definitely with the trajectory of contemporary films, a real emphasis played on trying to make the science more realistic, trying to make that something that people don't think, oh, that's not how gravity works. Because, people have concept of how basic science works. And since 2008 in the US, the National Academy of Science has actually launched in LA a science and entertainment exchange. So they have a kind of set up now where they consult quite heavily with scientists on a lot of the big blockbuster films that are in production. So, things like in Thor, they consulted with a physicist about the sequence at the beginning, whether or not they should be falling off a disc-shaped world, whereas, the science kind of advice was it should be spherical shaped because gravity wouldn't kind of work in that
work
way.
Yeah,
and that audiences would be savvy enough to acknowledge that and to know that, that's not quite how things are. It's interesting to see how much that plausibility has changed over the years, because if you go back to kind of 1950s sci-fi, obviously, there's lots of stuff in there that just completely doesn't, there's no regard at all
no
for things like gravity
whatsoever.
Or, they kind of maybe paid lip service to it. But I mean, a lot of that is to do with the effects as well, and how CGI has obviously
evolved
in such a way that they're capable of doing things on film now that you couldn't previously. I think as long as it doesn't completely defy the basic laws of physics, probably some imagination and poetic license with science is acceptable.
Well, a lot of scientists have been inspired. Lawrence M. Krauss is a scientist and philosopher who's been inspired by Star Trek, so he actually has refined it and fought himself that it indeed could be a possibility, including time warp and teleportation is something that could be possible in the future.
Well, I think also with graphics, just regarding graphics, like back then it was like whatever could be expressed by a string on a green screen, like versus today, or even like the tornado, it was like in Wizard of Oz, it was like
water.
Oh, it was a water. Yeah, exactly.
They would dye the water, I believe, and swirl it down a plug hole. But
and so
it worked.
Yeah, they didn't go to a physicist and say, "So if I had this water backdrop, how could it look real?" And they're like, "That's that is real.
Well, I think that too brings up the question of, you know, whether or not the audience is really contractually, once you kind of enter the cinema and sit down to watch a film, you've agreed to suspend disbelief.
Yeah.
So you've kind of agreed to go with what the premise of the film is. So there has to be some level too of audiences being willing to go along with what the filmmakers are doing. I mean, ultimately, they're telling a story. So, you know, is there responsibility to the science in the film, or is it to the storytelling? And to what extent, you know...
And Contact is a great film with Jodie Foster in it. That was a good film that looked at can we travel through wormholes and move space and time, but do we need to actually physically go somewhere? Can we do it in the very dimension that we are in now? And that was one of the questions Carl Sagan put up. I mean, that was based on his awesome film and study, you know, stories and studies that he did as a scientist.
Just quickly, do you want to intro the interview that we have coming
up? We've got a little interview here with Abigail Moncrief. Now, she's actually a curator at Experimedia, which is here in Melbourne in Swanston Street, of all things, so it's pretty cool. It's more of an event, sort of library almost, gallery style of feature. Now, she had brought over to Melbourne Hiroshi Ishiguro, who is the director of the Intelligent Robotics Laboratory, a part of the Department of Systems and Innovations, actually in Osaka University at Japan. And he brought over some of his Telenoid robots to Melbourne.
That was quite a mouthful. Good work, Sonia.
Phew, that was hard at this time of night, but there you go.
This is the interview here on Sci-Fi and Squeam, Joy 94.9.
Hi there, how are you?
Now, you're here at the Wheeler Centre, and it's for the Hiroshi Ishiguro robots, and there's a speech about his technology, his work.
Yes, I mean, Professor Ishiguro is a leader in his field as a roboticist, and I believe, according to his press, that he's been named one of the 100 top geniuses in the world. Mm. He's known, he's come here to Melbourne to speak about his robot Telenoid, and also his overall practice, obviously here as part of Experiment to speak to me. Mm. And we were interested in talking with him because obviously Telenoid is an empathetic robot. It's a robot with feelings that is a Skype mechanism that hopes to connect people over distance. He has a very unusual and quite visionary understanding of technology, and we're really fascinated by him and thrilled to present him here. Actually, interestingly enough, the Arts Centre just hosted Dr. Ishiguro, Professor Ishiguro, a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I think the Wheeler Centre programming and technology circles, I mean, I think it's a unique visit from a very special scientist. Certainly, I don't know if it's completely out of the question.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, because we are a science fiction show, of course. What do you know of Ishiguro? Do you know how much he's been influenced by, say, writers like Philip K. Dick and, you know, androids in science fiction?
You know, it's interesting. I've never really talked to him about that. I think he sees his work existing in a very social context. Mm-hmm. He's already used his robots, or particularly Telenoid, amongst the elderly. And I see a sort of a therapeutic role for his robots working in society. I think he also sees the possibility of Telenoid being adopted across all social spheres. So it's quite interesting, yeah. In terms of his relationship to science fiction, I actually don't know. We've never really talked about it.
Okay, I was just interested because they are becoming quite humanoid. Mm. And I guess some people are debating, you know, how far do we go with this technology? Are we making them into subservient beings in their own right? Are they remotely detached, or as far as, you know, when you say Telenoid, are they remote robots?
Well, the Telenoid has a sort of a non-gendered, very blank canvas kind of appearance and could appear to be any gender, any age. It's very non-specific. But Ishiguro is also known for making robots completely in his own likeness. And there is one that exists that is very difficult to differentiate from the real thing. And I think for him, that's a really interesting point. Mm. What is human, what is robot, are questions that he's really asking.
Right, fantastic. And how long does the exhibition run here in Melbourne at your event?
Experiment to Speak to Me is at RMIT Gallery. It's opening today. It's open today. It's the first day of the exhibition. Mm-hmm. It goes until November the 17th, so an eight-week season.
That's fantastic, because I had a few friends on Facebook saying, where can we go and see these amazing, you know, experiments, amazing inventions?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much a contemporary media art show, so it works across a number of levels. Ishiguro's really... there's a number of other robotic works in the show that people can come and experience. Mm-hmm. So look forward to welcoming anyone that wants to come down.
Fantastic. Thanks for talking to us, Abigail Moncrief.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Why is it that we usually ignore the fourth dimension? You see, we can move in the other three. As the doctor said, up, down, forwards, backwards, sideways. But when it comes to time, we are prisoners.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Krauss. I'm Foundation Professor and Director of the Origins Project at Arizona State University, a theoretical physicist and author. And you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
That's right, you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. For anyone who has just tuned in, we are talking about sci-fi and how it affects real life, or how real life affects sci-fi, vice versa. And the song we just heard before was Radio Gaga by Queen. And I think this is more relevant because of its clips from Metropolis in the video clip. And they use a lot of like reference to Metropolis in the song, so I thought that was actually quite good. And you might have heard a little sound effect, and that was a little sound effect from The Time Machine, 1960. Mm. And so that was a H.G. Wells book in 1960, and then 1895, and then made into a film in 1960, and it was a very, very popular sci-fi film. But we'll get back to that in a little bit. Sonia.
Yeah, well, we also talked off-air about some of the top... Is it top 10, Tara?
I found a kind of dubious top 15
top
on
15.
The internet of most scientifically accurate science fiction films. Mm. And the number one was one we talked about earlier, Contact. Mm-hmm. Number two, a favourite of mine, 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, fantastic.
And number three, Gattaca.
Andrew Nichols.
Big fans will be pleased to know that Primer is in the top 10. And The Man from Earth, The Woman in the Moon, and Moon, actually.
Moon.
Duncan Jones' Moon makes it just outside 10 at 12. Yeah, me
too. Very pleased with that, actually. It was a slow burner and reminded me of, a little bit Kubrick-ish.
Yeah, absolutely. And even a little bit like Solaris in parts. It was...
Tarkovsky, isn't it?
Yeah, Tarkovsky's.
Have you ever seen...
Yes.
The whole film?
I'm a huge fan of that film too.
It's a hardcore film, but
it's
interesting. Now we talked about 2001, and 2001 to me, I'm surprised that it makes it in the scientifically close to reality.
Yeah.
For me personally, it's more mythological, mystical, bit of Joseph Campbellistic.
I think the thing about 2001 is that it is everything. I think Kubrick just really captures everything in that film on a...
Arthur C. Clarke, and they wrote it together, basically, as a premise to the film. So it was written for a film, which was a bit of a first for the 1960s when they did it.
There's so many layers of things you can read into that film. So you're on a metaphysical level, on a philosophical level, on a literal level. There's lots of different readings of the film. But, apparently the science elements of it are pretty accurate. I think one of the things too that we just mentioned in the break that's interesting is the symbiosis of science and science fiction and the way in which they affect one another. So sometimes I think science fiction can, even influence the where science goes. We see a lot of things in film before they become reality, and then we sort of see that technology that's being used in cinema sometimes starts to become what we're using now.
I was thinking of virtual reality too, like films like Johnny Mnemonic, which had Keanu Reeves made back in the 90s. But the virtual reality aspect is slowly becoming a fact.
Absolutely. We might even have Total Recall one day where we go and plug ourselves in.
More like the original version,
the
but that's
original
my
Total Recall. Yeah, I haven't seen the remake.
Oh, dear.
Thinking of Total Recall, that's another thing that's kind of becoming reality is in the original, when Arnold Schwarzenegger wakes up, he goes into his kitchen or something and turns on the window. And you can change the channels.
Yes.
I've seen that actually. That's possible. That's something they're having in a lot of the modern day homes. Is yeah, this fake window?
It's kind of scary. I think, you know, there's that other thing too where perhaps, you know, are the films sort of conditioning us to be prepared for technology to come?
What do they know that we don't know?
Orson Welles always used to talk about future shock and how, you know, we can't cope with the speed at which technology is actually advancing, and it's kind of too much for us. So maybe there's something in seeing it for several years on screen first, becoming somewhat familiar with the concept of what's going to happen. Before it arrives, so that we're prepared or conditioned.
Maybe that's what Star Trek was all about, teleportation and the phases even. At laser guns are very similar.
Well, laser gun is very possible.
And the communicator. Look at the communicator that Kirk and Spock and cohorts use. It's a mobile phone. But, you know, Steve Jobs was a big fan of Star Trek.
And I just have to say, before we go into the next kind of segment, fridges with computers. Like, that's kind of like 90s, but it's updated a lot now. Like, if you went back, like, into the 80s, you'd be like, don't worry, in 10 years you'll have fridges with computers on them that
fridges
tell you what's
talk
in there.
And order your food online.
They order the food.
So they do that now.
It tells you.
And did you know, this is just a silly, trivial fact, of course, we're running out of time, but silly fact is Back to the Future, the original time-travelling vehicle wasn't going to be a car at all. It was going to be a refrigerator.
Oh, I remember this. What, I don't know why we know that. I think it was a recent article we read.
That would have been a very different film.
So it's got nothing to do with the kitchen fridge, obviously.
But Sonia, what today. Time is it?
I don't know. What time is it? Right. Dig my notes out.
And now, all that's needed is an audience.
What are we reviewing today?
It's Looper. Yes, it's 2042. And wise guy Joe Simmons, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is on the make. He has a blunderbuster and he executes people who are forcibly time-travelled back to his past, if that makes sense. They're killed swiftly and methodically, and the bodies are disposed of in the past, because in the future it's difficult to cover up an assassination, execution or a murder. So I've just spoiled the film probably for some people, so spoiler alert everybody. Now, we saw this last week, Mitch and I, but Tara was also present, I believe.
I saw it too. I actually loved this film. I was a really, really big fan. I quite liked that one of the things that they do in this film is not what Primer fans would like, is not get caught up too much in the specifics of time travel and waste too much time trying to explain with exposition.
It's very much like it reminded me of a Western / gangster film.
Yes.
The story, but then you're looking at the director. Did you see Brick? You've seen Brick?
Yes, I have.
By the
I
director,
yeah, I'm a
Ryan
fan of
Johnson.
Brick too.
Yeah. And of course, that had Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it. Now, this has got Bruce Willis in it, Emily Blunt, Paul Dano, Noah Segan, Piper Perabo, and wonderful Jeff Daniels. I don't have a problem with most of the cast. Won't talk about the Blunt instrument a bit later, but.
Blunt
you really,
instrument.
Yes, you really liked it then.
I did, yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought that it was a well signposted film, and that they didn't get too caught up in, like I said, the jargon of kind of what time travel is. There were some good jokes to kind of cover those tracks and excuse itself from having to go with that exposition.
Yeah.
I'm a very big fan of Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis, and I think that both of them in those lead roles were very well suited and pretty well cast for this film. They also did some quite amazing makeup on Joseph Gordon-Levitt to make him look more like Bruce Willis. And
I have a problem with that.
I'm sort of thinking, is that
really Bruce Willis?
Is that how his face looks?
No. Putty nose.
Look, I had a bit of an issue with the eyebrows and the eye colour. It was just hard for me to see Joseph Gordon-Levitt inside that role. But I must admit, by 20 minutes in, I was actually enjoying his performance. I started to ignore the makeup, but it just kept coming back. The eyebrows just keep looking a little too dark for his complexion. I don't know. But basically the story of it is a looper is somebody who is like a hitman, who basically executes people who are in the future, 2072, I think it is. They come back, there's a payment, they have a hood on their face, and the Looper, or the, you know, character, Joe Simmons or Bruce Willis, but won't spoil it too much for you, is the person that has to execute them by payment.
Yeah, they're closing the loop.
Closing the loop,
and I like that concept too. I think that the concept of this film is really interesting. I don't think it's probably, you know, the best film I've ever seen, but I think for a blockbuster, that it's really engaging. I think that I'm curious as to your issue with Emily Blunt. I think we just have to get to it.
Okay, we might get to it in a short time, I reckon.
Just quickly,
yeah.
Let's have a star rating, Sonia, out of 5.
I'm giving it 3 out of 5.
Out of 5? How many?
I'm going to go with 4.
4?
Ooh, 4. Okay.
I would say 3. I'm on a 3.
Well, you were sitting next to me and that probably didn't help.
Oh, no. I'm not against it and I'm not for it. I think it's a 3. Hmm. Like, this is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Here we are in the studio.
Now, just quickly. So, what was your issue with...
with who? Oh, we're talking about Looper.
Yeah, Looper.
Emily Blunt. It was the axe. There is a scene there a couple of times where she's chopping a dead stump and she's holding the axe wrong. It was a blunt instrument and I just couldn't let go of the fact that...
This is the issue with where reality is not right in film. It was the way she was holding the axe.
She was mangling that tree.
I have to agree. She was just... I'm like, was she meant to be cutting wood with that tree? Or was she meant to be... Was that, like, metaphor?
And the other issue...
I think it's metaphorical. I don't think it's meant to be too literal.
Yeah. What did you think of the evil child?
Look, you know...
Spoiler again. There's an evil child in there with anger management issues.
You know, I think that kid's a really good actor.
Scary.
That's quite a lot to demand of a small child. And there aren't that many kids who can pull that sort of performance off. Mm. One of the things that I did find slightly distracting is that that's also the kid in season 9 of One Tree Hill. Don't ask me how I know that. But he... I thought the role was really good. And, it's a nice element to the film to have... without spoiling too much for listeners, that connection between the present and the future, and that complication of time and the way that ties together with the central narrative.
I did really like the first 20 to 25 minutes, just quickly, the Paul Dano character, his friend Seth, Joe's friend, and the dissolving of that character because of the time interference and sequences. And look, that gave me a bit of a horror start because I like horror, so I was quite intrigued with that. But for me, it lost its way a little bit later. Oops.
So coming up next week, what do we have, Sonia?
Good question. Store? What do we have? We have got an interview with Steve Dillon, who's the organizer behind something called Oz HorrorCon. Yes, indeed. The first ever horror convention, big horror convention here in Melbourne. So we'll be chatting to him, and that's coming up on next week's show. But the convention is until the 27th of October, which is something to look forward to, with Halloween coming up and everything else.
I think it's going to be great.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
I can't wait for Halloween. Have you got your costumes ready, guys?
No, I'm really disorganized. Maybe I'll just go as myself. That's pretty scary.
I might just take a pumpkin
I'm going to be a skeleton.
Are you going on the shuffle? It's been announced. It's going to be on the 28th, I believe.
On the 28th. But not on the shuffle, just in general, on Halloween.
Oh, a party. Just a general Halloween,
you know, just
thing.
A party that you go to. I don't know.
Living Dead party. Yep. So that's next week.
I hope everyone listening has kind of been a little bit informed about sci-fi and reality. And thank you very much to Neil Foley. Thank you to Tara for coming in. Thank you very much
for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you to
Abigail. Moncrief.
That was a really, really great interview. And thank you for everyone listening tonight. It's been a really good kind of experience. Talk about it amongst yourselves. How is reality? Kind of think about that.
I'm ready to teleport myself. We're a long way off before we can get that, I reckon.
I just hope that I can get out of the automatic door.
Yes. It's one of those awkward moments when you're just standing there and nothing happens.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
Are you prepared for the zombie apocalypse? In case of emergency, break glass and tune in to Joy 94.9 on a Tuesday night for Sci-Fi and Scream.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.